I'm Christian Abbott.
I'm Nathan Lavender.
I'm Sean Abbott.
And this is the Red Mist Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Red Mist Podcast, Season 4, Episode 32. Today, we'll travel back to NASCAR for our Car of the Week. This week, it is the number 32 Ford Taurus from 2000, the NASCAR year 2000. Car owner Cal Wells and his PPI team, Precision Preparation Racing, which was his off-road team in Toyota off-road racing. So he brought it to NASCAR as well as to IndyCar, and brought in former Trans Am driver Scott Pruitt to drive that car for 1 year, and with title sponsor Tide. And here's a fun fact. Nate won't even know this. Why number 32?
It's one less for the grid of Indy.
Oh, good. I like that. No, it was the carried the number 32 was the number, the sum total of the cars that carried Tide as a sponsor before that. So it was the 17, the 5, and the 10.
Oh, all right.
Oh, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
That was a fun fact. All right. That closes it out. There wasn't, car 32 is not a popular number. I mean, in NASCAR it is, but like, I couldn't find anything else good anywhere. All right. On tonight's episode, we'll talk about NASCAR at the Rovo. And it's an elimination race. We're down to 8 after the race. We'll talk F1 in Singapore. No dragon sightings. Very upset. No dragon, no lizard sightings. Very upset. Nope. And then we'll delve into news and notes, and there is a bootload. So let's get into it. The Roval at Charlotte. It's a road course, and care to guess what happened?
Did someone dominate?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay, this race is half one.
Is that driver not from the United States?
Yes.
And has that driver pretty much won every road course this year?
Yes.
Now I will say there was
not
there
was an outside. Did he quite win? He did.
He did. Now I will say this: there was an opportunity for my other guy, the Dinger, to win the race. He was hanging around.
Yes. Yep.
Somehow finished the race spinning, going Ricky Bobby style across the start finish line.
Yeah, and he wasn't the only one.
He wasn't the only one, no. No. So, anyways, so yes, Shane Van Gisbergen did win the race with a titanic battle with Kyle Larson. It was awesome. A lot of, I liked it. Larson throwing a lot of sprint car moves at him, which was cool. Van Gisbergen throwing a lot of V8 supercar moves, and all clean racing, a little bit of rubbing, but hey, it was all fair. And then Christopher Bell and Chris Buescher mixed it up as well. So that was fun. And then the other road course junkie, Michael McDowell, finished 5th. Ryan Preece with a good finish, finished 6th. Suarez, 7th. Chase Elliott, 8th. The Dinger, 9th. And Tyler Reddick was 10th. So,
yep.
I don't have much more to say about the race. It was fun to watch. I will say that. And then the crap that went on just for the guys trying to finish. You know, it was just, you know, it's the one thing I can't stand about the race. It's like like, I have to listen to those, the announcers, it's like up 10, down 10, you know, and I'm like, can we just watch the race? It's almost like the big contretemps in F1 now is cutting away from passes to look at the people in the paddock, in the garage, you know?
Yep.
Which that's a new thing. So
we can get into that later too.
Yeah, we can get into that. But I, you know, outside of that, entertaining race. I like the Roval. I know other people don't, but Dale Jr. doesn't like it, but I like it. I just don't like the chicanes. Although Van Ginsburg had actually showed you how to drive the chicanes properly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, he dominated, and I think towards the end, like, I mean, it was clear as day. He was much better with his tires than everyone else. And, you know, by the end of the stint, yeah, he cakewalked everyone.
Yeah, because there was one stint in the middle of the race, he was complaining about the tires, but he was lapping faster than everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. And it was only like the last 10 laps of the race where if a yellow came out, he would have been screwed.
Right.
Because he had the pace where he didn't have to pit for new tires.
Yeah.
To then be caught by anyone else. But the problem was, obviously, if he was the last one to pit and he didn't end up pitting, but if there was a green-white checkered that came out, he would have been shuffled right back.
Yeah. So. Yeah, probably.
I was thinking that he might have come in at one point just to, you know, cover him off and be done with the strategy and not have to worry about it if there was a yellow, but thankfully that didn't happen, so... I guess the only other thing I'm gonna say about this race is you get what you get with this playoff system, and the last lap crap with Chastain was exactly a product of what you were asking for, and even if the move stuck for Ross, like, I can't imagine he would have walked away going into the next round while still taking out Hamlin.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's just one of the dumbest moves I've ever seen. I know his wall ride around Martinsville was insane, and, like, I totally fine by me. Like, that it paid off and whatever. But, like, on a road course kind of scenario, I mean, like, even really, like, any short oval with a, you know, your traditional pass, not the wall, right? Like, you're just gonna send it down the inside and try and get the guy. I mean there's bump and runs, which are okay, but like this was spearing a guy, like, to try and get a position. This is not racing. That was just demo derby.
Yeah,
at that point,
100% demo derby.
And I'm not gonna waste more time on it than I already have right now. But, like, it's just stupid, and
yeah,
you wonder why people don't take the sport seriously. And, like, even I watching the race up in the front of the pack, perfect, totally fine, didn't have a problem, everything played out, was good. It's the crap that goes on in the back that they promote that makes it look stupid.
Yeah, no, 100%.
So, anyways, so, hopefully it doesn't, I'm just screaming down a bottomless pit at this point, but if they ever change it, thank you to whoever has their head screwed on when they make that decision, but until that day comes, they'll still have this crap going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Enough of NASCAR. Well, I guess the last thing is they go to Vegas this weekend.
They go to Vegas. They go to Vegas.
Yep. And on to F1.
Yeah, well, let's hold on. Let's, right, yeah, you go to Vegas. I know.
Or know, do you have more NASCAR?
No. It was a cutoff race, so we should just tell you who qualified and who didn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, because, like, Nate would be all upset.
Yeah. No, fair point.
Yeah. Hold on. Okay, so... Okay, so... They have, like, a car going across the screen, because, like, we got another. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so your point leader now is Denny Hamlin. He's the plus eight guy.
Okay.
Yeah, Blaney is plus six, Larson plus four, Byron plus four. But those two are what they call above the cut of line. The guys, the four below it are Christopher Bell. He's 4 points. He's minus four. Elliott is minus 14. Chase Briscoe is minus 14. And Logano is minus 24.
Wait, hold on. Where's SVG? I thought if you win, you're in, right?
No, he was eliminated.
No, but he's now won again.
No, he's still eliminated.
But he's won. Isn't this
I see what you're saying. I thought this was the case, but it is not the case.
So winning doesn't even matter at this point anymore.
No, it does not. No.
I think I'm starting to figure this out, right?
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty lame. And the best part is, I and God hope that he doesn't win this, but Hamlin could win this and not be in NASCAR next year because of the lawsuit. Yeah. Well, Hamlin could be only because he drives for Joe Gibbs, but his team might not be.
Yeah.
So, anyways. Yeah. All right. So, as you state, we're off to Vegas, Sin City for the South Point 400 at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. So, and I unfortunately did not see the Las Vegas Motor Speedway during my visit to Vegas the last few days. So, anyways, and I just, everyone that's going, have fun. I don't know. Anyways, we'll talk about it. We'll preview my thoughts on Vegas and Formula One. Not this week, but when we get close to the Vegas race. All right. Just having seen what I saw while I was there. Okay. All right. So that shuts down NASCAR until next week. All right. F1, Singapore, night race. Probably the most strenuous race on our drivers.
Yeah. It's the longest race of the season and the hottest race of the season.
So cool suits were in play this weekend.
But not for everyone.
Not for everyone. That's true. You have the option to run it or not. Mm-hmm. Not the most thrilling weekend.
No, but it was a race. It happened.
It was a race, right? Right.
F1 race is Abu Dhabi 2021.
Could we review last week's picks?
Yeah. You led the way with 1.5 picks, correct? So just to clarify, what I do by these points is if you get someone on the podium in the correct position that they finish, that's 1 point.
Ooh, I like that.
And then you get a half point if you get a driver on the podium but on the wrong spot.
Not in the right place.
Yeah.
So what did I get my full point for?
Verstappen in the second.
Second, and yep. George for third, right?
Yeah, you had George in third, but he obviously won the race. So
who did I have winning? I had Leclerc, right?
No, you had Piastri.
Oh, I had Oscar. Okay. Yeah. We'll get to papaya rules in a minute.
Yeah, and then Nate and I had Max on the podium, but not in the right position.
Okay. So all right.
That's all.
All right. Now, in Vegas, I did lay money on the race. I guessed incorrectly on a single bet, of Verstappen winning. And then on my parlay bet, I won $80. So I picked, you can pick guys to finish on the podium. I picked Russell and Verstappen, the podium. So you didn't have to pick all three podium positions. You could pick, all you had to do was pick the drivers you thought might hit the podium. So I didn't trust either one of the McLaren guys because I figured they might get into it. So I went with George and Max. And then I cleaned house on guys scoring points. So I picked Kimi Antonelli to pick score points. I picked Berman, Sainz, and Alonso to score points. Because had I picked just the, you know, if I went George, Max, Lance, and Oscar, I wouldn't have won any big money.
Right.
I mean, and I'll honestly, this was, I bet $20 on Max to win, and then 20 on this parlay, two-leg parlay. So, and the two-leg parlay came in. So, I won 100, but because I lost 20, it's $80 net. So,
yeah.
Anyway, it's good. It was fun. I got to go see if BetMGM has that on there. Because I'm just going to do pick a podium guy and pick point guys. That's what I'm going to do. And you can do it up until the race starts.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool.
Nice.
But in this case, you had to be up, you know, you had to do it like Saturday. I mean, what was the race? Saturday night? Mm-hmm. Sunday morning. So I had to do it Saturday night before midnight kind of something because I think the race started at 1 a.m. or something. I don't know. Whatever. When I was in Vegas, so. Anyways, it was fun. All right. I was impressed with George throughout the weekend. You know, he deserved, you know, everything he got. So no issue there. Max just, again, fought all weekend. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was good. You know, and Max, they asked Max what's the key to winning the race, and he was spot on. It was the start. And, you know, at the end of the race, they asked him what happened. And, you know, Hagami didn't. He goes, well, if I didn't get him at the start, I wasn't going to get him.
Yeah.
You know, I will say this. So, you know, George controlled the race out front, executed pit stops, everything like that. Max's team did the same, but Max did a fantastic job of driving clean yet defensively.
Yeah, I mean, it just seemed very reminiscent of how he would handle both the Mercedes when the two Mercedes
back in the day when it was Lewis and Valtteri.
Yep.
Yeah. So found that to be I found that really good. So that was kind of cool. As for Team Papaya. You know, congrats on the manufacturer or the whatever manufacturer's championship, but Jesus, they are that is a disaster in the making right now.
It's the thing that stuck out to me that I found interesting about this this title was they won it with the same amount of races to go as Red Bull did in 23.
Yep. Yep.
However, in 23, only Ferrari and Carlos Sainz was able to take down Red Bull.
Right. So I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. So it's two interesting points out of this. McLaren clearly have the dominant car this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think the title would have been able to have been wrapped up sooner if they figured out, you know, a couple races here and there earlier in the season. But having said that, that also means that the car isn't quite as dominant as it was. Or as the Red Bull car might have been, but obviously if you go to the 2023. The only flaw in that year was Perez was not finishing second or on the podium every single race. So that's there's in that case you have a dominant car but not the dominant driver, and then in this season you definitely have a strong driver pairing with a strong car pairing, but with the field so close you're throwing away points at a few rounds, and also the other teams are close enough where they can get you once in a while. So just an interesting comparison for between the 2 years. Now, having said that, there's still six rounds to go, and the conversation still is, can Max overcome the points haul he has to win the champion, the driver's championship?
It's kind of interesting because he is eating into it, and you know, and McLaren, it like whatever they're trying to do to manipulate this thing, if they're trying to make it go to the last race, it's going to bite them, because it could seriously come down to, you know, Max chipping away because they're dinking around with the two, you know, fighting for points, you know. And then they have one race where they get a double DNF, and he's right back in it.
Yeah, but this is something we've said all year. Like, they need to just pick a driver and be done with it.
Right.
Because,
well, we're past the halfway point, and the leader all season, for the majority of the season, has been Oscar. Okay.
Yes.
And clearly, Zach is whatever he's playing with Lando, you know. It's Lando, but I mean, Jesus, I don't know. I mean, seriously,
the past round or two has definitely been Lando being the stronger driver, which you know, is what it is. Well, yeah, is what it is, and you know, Oscar has made his mistakes, and so like it's not like he's been a perfect lead driver. In that sense,
right.
from within the championship points, but that's, you know, not every title just goes swimmingly, just like that every single time. So
yeah,
there are going to be ups and downs, and you just got to take the races when you can and move on. But this isn't the first moment in the season where they've had some controversy of these papaya rules or lack of commitment to just say one driver is going to go ahead for the points just for the reason that we're just committing to this one driver to score the most points to outscore Verstappen. Like, this is the only threat that they've had all year is Max. And they're just not committing to it because they... Yeah, they want to play this game of being fair and whatever, and I'm like, if Max wins this year, it will be hilarious. And really show what kind of a team McLaren is, and or maybe it's just going to be one of those hard lessons of realizing, like, this is how it has to be moving forward, and you can't do this.
No, 100%.
And I'm not saying Max isn't deserving of this title, because he's been there's been a few races where, you know, he's let points slip, where, you know, now you're at the point of the season of like, well, should he have played some races differently? Like, I mean, the first race that comes to mind is Spain, but like, having take that race out of contention, like, Max's attitude to this whole season is, he doesn't think he was going to win anyways. So he's just been, you know, I mean, he's showing up every week, but like the expectation has been set that as long as he comes in behind the two McLaren guys, he's maximized the season.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. Or if he picks off wins where the car was, you know, clearly the better car, You know, right. That's fine too. But what has obviously happened, they have skunked onto something.
Yeah.
With the car.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow they're starting to cobble this thing together. Now, sure, it's a long way to overcome Oscar, and we'll get to that in a second when we kind of look at the points. But it's Lando's in play to be overhauled.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the rest of the season is going to play out with these rules now, because they still need to, or the big question at hand is who's going to win the driver's title, but with the constructor's title wrapped up, one thought is boys have at it, and you know, whatever you think you need to do to win the title, go do it.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because the team's secure at this point. Like everyone's getting a good payday at this point. I would, unless you know there's some bonuses based on driver standing, but I think if they say that, like, let you guys can do whatever you want and you can wreck the car, like, if you feel that that's what's necessary to win against the other driver, I think that's going to be probably worse anyways in the long run, because they do have to kind of unify at some point to still beat Max.
Right. Yeah.
So, because, so, like you mentioned, one DNF for either of these guys, like, that this comeback becomes very, very real.
So, just kind of, like, let's talk about a couple drivers of the race here. Let's exclude George and Max. I think they were at the top end of the field throughout the weekend. The McLaren guys were doing whatever they do. But Kimi Antonelli, nice rebound.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is Kimi's first time to this track.
Yeah, I think so.
So that was good. Then we have the senior representative of Formula One, Fernando Alonso.
Yeah. I mean, Aston showed up with good pace this week.
Yeah, well, Fernando showed up with good pace too.
Yes. Yep.
And he was entertaining,
mm-hmm.
both on the track and on the mic.
Doesn't disappoint.
I'd like to salute our final two point getters, Ollie Berman and Carlos Sainz. Carlos with it. Again, a points finish after finishing on the podium. Fantastic job.
Mm-hmm. And Ollie, after starting dead last on track because they got disqualified. Yeah. Both Williams got disqualified. Right.
Disqualified. So he went from 22nd to 10th, you know, so that was fantastic. Ollie, another just fine outing for him in the Haas. Again, outpacing his more seasoned teammate. So, I think he's kind of secured his place at Haas. Quite a bit. Also, like, the salute Isaac Hadjar, because he was around the entire time.
Yep.
So, and I thought he put on a great effort. So, like, to kind of salute those guys.
Yeah. No, it was great race results. I just wish I had seen some of Carlos's and Alonso's moves to get where they finished.
There was some other stuff. There was some battles that, again, would have liked to have seen.
Yeah.
Not quite sure what was the reasoning, other than showing, the F1 driver's girlfriends. And I will say this, they all have the same haircut or hairstyle. It was all pulled back in a big tight bun. And honestly, could care less. And then I do not need to care. I don't care about seeing celebrities in the pit paddock. Don't care. Let's keep it to the race here. All right.
Well, it just gets back to the, and this isn't like this is not coming from someone being a hardcore F1 fan. Like, this is just from a regular fan in general. Like, if I want to watch the race and there's stuff going on that's interesting, like passing, mm-hmm. and you don't show that stuff, then it creates it just propagates the problem of driving people away and having less interest in it. So I mean, like, show the on-track product. Like, this is what you came to watch. I mean,
and a lot of this really started somewhat innocuously from a couple just tweets from Formula high-profile drivers.
Yeah.
Tiff Nadell just kind of threw it out there on his Twitter account. Mm-hmm. And so other people were catching on, and it was all through the weekend they were catching on. To the point when they asked Carlos about it, he actually knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of funny, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it just kind of shows, like, is this a race or entertainment? And given the fact of all these proposed changes that they're coming to, which we'll talk about towards the end of the season, yeah, clearly it's all about entertainment and not the race.
Yeah.
And it's you know what's going to happen? What's going to happen is it's going to drive – so NASCAR is seeing this. The hardcore NASCAR fan does not watch a NASCAR race. Okay? Before the playoffs and the chase, I would sit there and watch a NASCAR race only because it was a race. I can't watch it now because it's not a race. You know?
Yeah.
You know, if F1's going to be like, we're going to not have, we're going to have one day of practice and one race. I mean, you know what's going to happen? There's going to be, it's going to be, I don't know. What do I want to call it? You know, it's just gonna be a gimmick. I mean, really. Mm-hmm. And if I was a manufacturer, I'm like, what am I paying all this money for? You know?
Well, I mean, you're paying the money, but like, you're, as long as whatever piece of the pie
you're getting in return.
I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, all these teams, I mean, this is just reopening the discussion with Cadillac and any new team that comes in. It's like, if you get any new team to join the grid, like, the piece of the pie that every team has is going to get smaller.
Yeah,
from the deal. So, which it stinks that this is how it's drawn up, but I mean, it's how they want to operate and how everything's been put in place. So,
no, 100%.
Yeah, it's becoming an exclusive club that is separating fans that want to stay in tune but just can't be asked to sometimes. A similar issue of this came up a number of years ago where the midfield battle really was good. And once enough people made enough of a stink about it, the rest of the season you were seeing more of the midfield battles. And it's like, good, that's great. Because at that point, I think this is when Mercedes was just dominating every race. And it wasn't even close. Like, races were being won by 50 seconds to a minute kind of deal.
Yeah.
And they always had the camera on either Lewis, Valtteri, or Max, depending on the race at that time. Meanwhile, you know, you'd look at some intervals in the midfield and you're like, there's a battle here and there. Like, let's go watch the strategy of those guys play out. Like, there's just no... You want to show the drivers and be more personable with the drivers, like, then you need to show them racing and not just a highlight of, you know, who's in their garage, because you can get that stuff when you go watch Drive to Survive. Like, that's what that's for.
Yeah,
if you want to be able to, you know, feel like you know the drivers a little bit more, then you want to know, you want to watch their race and what they've done on track.
Yep. Like, so. Yep. And hear their opinions after the fact. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I gotcha. All right. Not a whole heck of a lot to talk about in this race.
No, definitely just kind of straightforward. It was interesting to see, which strategy drivers chose, because it seemed like up at the front, it was either, you know, pick the softs or the mediums to start with and then go to the hards.
Yeah.
But then there were some drivers in the back of the pack where they went with the mediums, but then tried to go long enough where they could switch to the softs at the end of the run.
Yeah.
And that worked out for a couple of them. Didn't work out for some of them, but I think some of it was also just car pacing the car in general. But yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I think stuff like that just needs to be highlighted more and brought into it, because it's for people who don't understand what's going on during the race and all the intricacies of it, you don't pick up on it. And it'd be nice to, you know, have some more time spent around that and digging into it, because, like, not only do you get the new fans to understand it more, but, like, you get all the hardcore fans that, like, want to know what's going on in the race to still be as involved.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's just take a quick... The constructors, you know, McLaren wrapped that up. Mercedes is in second. So it's really... Oh, I didn't realize it was this bad.
Yep.
Mercedes has a 27-point lead on Ferrari. This is where it gets... This is the bad thing. Ferrari is third with two drivers. Only 8 points ahead of Red Bull, and it's one driver.
Yeah. It's bad.
It's bad.
I know Yuki scored last week in Baku, but
it's the points. The points from their second driver has been so inconsistent. It's not even funny. So
inconsistent. It's been irrelevant.
Honestly, non-existent.
Up until Baku, that Yuki had only scored points being in 9th and 10th. That's 1 and 2 points.
So
that's nothing.
So, of this, Max has scored, of the 290 points, Max has scored 273.
Yeah.
That means two other drivers have scored 17 points. Had they, I mean, if you had the two Williams guys, I mean, they'd be clearly, they'd almost be in second place. Mm-hmm.
Oh, actually, I'm just looking at the whole season on results, but getting back to my comment about lost points for Max in a race, Spain's one of them, yes. But the other race is Austria, because he got wiped out by Kimi.
Oh, right. So had he, yeah. So he technically probably they'd be in second place right now.
Even if he got,
fifth place points, like 10 points. Yeah.
Like he was there. Yeah. He was there for 10 points, you know.
Right. They'd be in third place.
He'd be in third place. And the championship would be that much closer.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. That's a fair point.
I,
Oh my God. I'm not saying they're going to catch Ferrari. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't think they're going to catch Mercedes. Mercedes is their drivers are capable of both score points.
Yeah.
Ari are capable of scoring points.
Kimi seems to be out of his midseason slump that he went into.
Yeah. He's a rookie. It's going to happen, you know?
He is. Kimi is doing better than what I figured he needed to do at minimum. I thought him being in a top four team, he just had to finish eighth. Well, he's seventh.
He's done. Yeah. Yeah.
And the missing, the driver in eighth isn't even a Red Bull driver. Well, sorry, let me rephrase that. He was a Red Bull driver, but not right now.
Yeah. No, I know. So that's really interesting. And the other point is to point out in the Constructors' Championship is the meteoric rise of Williams to fifth place. Congratulations there.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing holding the V-Carb team back, I mean, is the second driver has just been swapped in and out. You know?
I think we're past that point now.
You think so?
But I mean, I think if Yuki had stayed at V-Carb, he probably would have gotten some point scoring finishes in there.
Right.
But also, like, with Liam, like, yeah, three out of the last four races, he's only scored once, but that one finish was fifth at Baku. But before that, 2, 4, 6, 7, the seven races before that, he had 4 point scoring finishes, and then there was two retirements. One in Silverstone wasn't even his fault; like he was just.
Right.
He was collateral at that point. And I can't remember what happened in Canada, but yeah, I mean, it's not like he's having a bad season either. I think it's just with how well Hadjar has been doing. Hadjar's advantage has been consistency. Like he's been in the same car the entire season. He hasn't had to move and he is obviously very talented, but
All right. And then just, you know, like we talked about the drivers, so. All right, so we're off to COTA next. So,
yeah.
Back to the United States for Grand Primo number two.
Well, not only back to the U.S., but we do the Americas Tour, because we got COTA, Mexico, Brazil, and then back up to Vegas.
Yeah.
So we do those four races, but before we get to those races, this weekend is Petit Le Mans.
So Petit Le Mans is this weekend. Activities have started to kick off at the track today. So we had a Michelin Pilot Challenge, Porsche Carrera Cup. Are the Lambos here?
I think it's MX5 and Porsche Cup that are here.
Hold on a second. Bear with me 1 second, please.
It is the WeatherTech Big Boys Michelin Pilot Series, the VP Michelin Sports, or I'm sorry, the VP Racing Sports Car Challenge, which is LMP3, GT3, and GT4.
Okay, I got the I got it all here.
And then it's
so
Porsche Cup
tomorrow,
and the Mazdas, MX-5s.
Okay, yeah. So tomorrow we have we got Mazda qualifying, we got Porsche Carrera Cup qualifying, Michelin Pilot Challenge practice, then we got the big boy practice. Then we have VP Challenge Race 1 at 105, Mazda race at 2:10. WeatherTech practice, followed by a Porsche Carrera Cup race, and then Michelin Pilot Challenge practice qualifying and from 6 to 7 tomorrow night, and then night practice. And then Friday, Friday is the big race day. We got BP Challenge Race 2, that's at 8:30, Mazda, 9:30, Pilot Challenge, Porsche Carrera Cup Race 2. Then we have
Pilot Challenge.
Hold on, where is it? Yep, the Fox Factory 120 2-hour race. And then we have IMSA qualifying. Mm-hmm. Close out the day. And then Saturday. See, this is what happens when you don't have the Lamborghinis there. There's no race on Saturday morning.
It's just the big race.
Yeah, the big race. All right.
I think maybe they have warm up in the morning, but that's.
That's it. Yeah, there's. So. Actually, there is no.
Oh, we're just.
There is no warm up. So, wow. Okay. All right. That's just a quick rundown on the event. Some news leading into the event. Tomorrow, actually, IMSA will announce its full season entry list. Mm-hmm. So excited to see that. One team that will be on the entry list announced their plans today, at least on what car they'll run and manufacturer they'll be aligned with, and that's Riley Motorsports. They will be returning to the Ford fold and be running Mustangs and GTD.
Yeah, I was excited to see that.
That's pretty cool. So good for them. So that I believe that they're just going to be in GTD. The Multimatic guys will be running the factory program.
I believe so.
In GTD Pro. So yeah. So that's cool. Because Bill Riley, son of Bob, Bill was affiliated with Bob in the halcyon days of the Roush Protofab Mustangs that dominated IMSA GTO racing and SCCA Trans Am racing. Those cars were kick-ass. And Bob, Bill's dad, who's since passed away, was a engineer on the Ford GT40 program.
Yep.
And he wasn't in the movie.
No.
And he was also, just real quick, he was also an engineer on the Saturn V rocket program.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That doesn't suck. You built the GT40 and the Saturn V rocket. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah,
you had a good life. Mm. And then you bought the crazy ass Intrepid. Mm. Anyways, all right. Another team that's announced their plans. Fan favorites of the paddock, AO Racing, will be back in LMP2 and GTD Pro. Perfect. The Rexy and Spike are back.
Yes.
Exciting. That's very exciting.
Quick note on that. They have their Halloween spooky livery this week on both cars.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. It looks awesome. The biggest thing, though, with next year, I'm going to get to this, but for the GTD Pro car, it's uncertain if Lauren Heinrich's going to be back in the car.
Right, because now there's additional drivers that might be available.
I had thought before this other thing happened, we'll get to it in a minute. Mm. I thought he was moving onward and upward at Porsche.
Mm. Yeah.
So, anyways, just going through. This is spooky livery on the friggin' Porsche. Holy crap, it looks awesome.
Yeah. It'll be weird not looking for a green dinosaur, but.
Green dinosaur, but man, the spooky skeleton car looks awesome. On both cars.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen that stuff since the Lizards. So.
Yeah. No, they got the marketing done, which is good.
Yeah, which is awesome. All right. I'm just trying to see if there's anything else. I think that covers that. All right. So let's get to the let's get to the big news that happened this week earlier.
Well, the big news that today that Toyota was testing their new hypercar at
Well, exciting. Once again, a manufacturer that continues to support the hypercar program for the longest time, even through thick and thin. I'm a big fan of Porsche.
All right. Sorry, hold on. We're now switching into the big news.
The big news. Sorry. Okay, so I'm a big fan of Porsche. I love the fact that Porsche supports customer racing and such. But, you know, the big thing is when they put a factory effort together, it's awesome, right? Because it's whether it's in GT cars or in prototypes. Mm-hmm. It's fun. They had the Rothman Porsches back in the day. You had, the Martini and Rossi 935s, all that stuff. And then obviously their support for the customer level teams led to some, you know, great successes with the 935s all the way up through the 956, 962s, and into the 911s and such. But if ever, man, when it comes to factory racing at the prototype level, they are an absolute clown show. The second clown show is going to be coming in another year. So,
I was going to say who takes top clown in this discussion.
Yeah, well, we're going to see. but right now, so the news is Porsche has pulled the plug on its WEC program, effective the end of this year.
Yeah.
However, they are going to run in IMSA, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. As a factory team, okay? Now, in IMSA, you do not have to be a factory entry. So if Dyson Racing decided to come back and run in 963, they certainly can. There's no two-car limits in IMSA. You can run one car. You can, you know, be a customer and whatever. However, in WEC, you have to be a manufactured team, and you have to run two cars for the entire season. Porsche this year was running, there were three cars being run. Did they run three factory efforts at Le Mans this year, or just two? I think two. I think.
No, I think they did three. But
they did three.
They
one
did...
was the IMSA car, right?
Yes. Yeah. One was technically the IMSA car because the IMSA car.
So there were four. There were four Porsches on the grid.
Yes.
And now the other one was the Proton Porsche. So now these guys have, you know, basically, you know, dropped out next year, leaves Proton in a bad spot because technically now they can't run because they only have one car. They have two chassis, but they have one car. But now you need the money to run two cars.
Yeah.
So congrats to that. Congrats once again to the board at Porsche. And the reasoning is absolutely asinine. They're going to continue with their 963 effort. They're going to continue in the States because North America is the biggest market for Porsche. The blowback there is if they pulled out of that. Ugh, I don't even want to know. All right. Especially with the fact that in IMSA, the BOP is somewhat a little more even than, say, it is in WEC.
Every team is given a win in IMSA at some point of the season. So you will if you go winless in IMSA, that's your own fault.
Exactly.
I think that's probably the best way to describe it.
In which I can't understand why Ferrari will not enter a car here. I have no clue.
There. Well, I think I can see why.
What? Because the BOP doesn't favor them?
Not every race, it doesn't.
Well, yeah, I know. That's called racing.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean IMSA is proactive with their BOP adjustments?
Just BOP on the whole.
Sucks.
It is a very hard system to try and implement and, be fair. Because
fair. Yep.
at some point, you do have to look at the season and be like, if it is supposed to be a balanced system, mm-hmm. it's literally in the name, then that means, you know, the same car should not be dominating every single race. And it's not to say that yep. Ferrari dominated every race that it won, because there was a race or two where they did win that it was very close. However, yep. they have had a substantial performance advantage. Even when they aren't winning, they're still up there. So mm-hmm. they have not rotated to the bottom part of the field in quite a bit. And it's been really hard watching Toyota go through all this these past couple years, because they, well, I say this, but they won the manufacturer's title last year. And they did yeah. that through consistency and competence as well.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I think it's been a bit more of a hit on them to try and get some of the other teams up. So it's hard to watch, you know, when you do have a very good team not be at the front, and you know it's not their fault necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like it's pretty obvious that they're being targeted in a sense of just like we need to you need to not do well for a bit. And really, what manufacturer? I shouldn't even say manufacturer. Who would voluntarily show up to a championship where they're told you have to finish last, kind of deal, or you know, get that message of like you're just here to kind of run around and not win. But when you kind of when saying that with Toyota, I'm just gonna hit this one point, then we can go back to Porsche. If you do zoom out on their performance in WEC for the entire years that, or for the whole lifespan that they've been involved with WEC, they've won mm-hmm. so many races. They are the dominant manufacturer, and then you know Audi and Porsche come next after that. But with their time at WEC, they have definitely dominated. And you know when you keep that in mind, a year like this really isn't all that bad.
Excuse me.
It's just hard to see them race where they run where they are with the program that they've had such mm-hmm. good success in, which you know led them to create their new Evo package or brand new car.
Yep.
That got spotted testing. And the only thing I'll say on the car, everything looks a little bit different compared to what the new one is, but the big standout piece, at least for me, was the rear wing design. It was not flat across the rear. The middle section was flat, and then the middle third was flat, and then the two thirds on the ends that overhang the tires actually angled up. So, which I just thought that was an interesting design choice there. But
yeah.
Obviously, I don't see the CFD of why they would have chosen that. Anyways, Porsche. Yeah, it sucks that they're not going to be part of WEC, and not just because they won't be doing all the other endurance rounds, but mainly because they are forfeiting their spot to compete in hypercar at Le Mans.
Right.
I think some of this is also kind of it's bringing into question again these convergence rules that this whole platform was supposed to achieve, because with how WEC has it laid out, where you can't invite a manufacturer mm-hmm. from IMSA, ELMS, or Asian Le Mans Series if their manufacturer isn't a part of their year-long series, I think kind of ruins the spirit of the sport in that aspect. Because, yeah. I mean, if Acura won IMSA, you know, handily, like, I would want to see it go represent IMSA in the race.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, it competes against the same cars that already run in that top class for WC.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from that standpoint, you know, it seems kind of ridiculous just to have an imagery kind of deal. But getting back to Porsche, like, I'm really disappointed to see their choice in this, because, like, at a time where the only news has been a new manufacturer coming in, and we're going to have, you know, another car next year, two cars the year after, and maybe a third manufacturer after that. Like, it's all been, you know, looking good after that. And then just to hear Porsche, like, the manufacturer that, I mean, aside from Toyota, but, like, Porsche was the big name that came in and said, we're back in this, and did the most extensive amount of testing for their car before Cadillac, BMW, and Acura got involved. Like, Porsche was, you would expect Porsche to win just because of the amount of testing that they did going into this whole program.
Yeah.
It just stinks to see them do this. I know they'll still be in IMSA, but, you know, Le Mans, not being at Le Mans, is just kind of,
yeah, that's where Porsche made its name.
Yeah, I actually watched I think you had sent this to me, but it was like the Giants of Le Mans. On YouTube. It was like,
It was 40, awesome.
45 minutes or to an hour documentary, but it was all about Porsche's dominance at Le Mans. I shouldn't just say dominance. Their history throughout Le Mans. And you know, it went back to when they first started out and where they are today. And I watched that video within the past week or so, and I was like, all right, like, they made that video a couple years ago, and it was like, oh, like, Porsche is now back at Le Mans, and we're going to see what we could do, you know? But now it's been 2 years after, and they're not going to be there anymore. So I just, that kind of left a bad taste in my mouth after watching that and getting, you know, I guess, reignited into the whole history of Le Mans and, like, what it means to be there and everything like that. And now they're just not going to be there. So at least not in the top class, you know?
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, just, you know, this is really just, like you said, unfortunate news. So, a couple things on this. Part of the reason was, you know, they, you know, obviously it's worldwide soft sales of the cars. They went in on electric.
Yeah.
And it doesn't resonate. I'm sorry. It's not a performance thing. You know, Porsche is known for performance and combustion engines. That's what they are. If you want to put a hybrid in there, fine. But, you know, but they still want to support F Formula E, which is, like, does anyone watch Formula E? I don't.
Well, there's definitely people that watch it. People that I know.
Yeah, well, it's, no.
I think I know one person that does.
Yeah. So I don't watch it. And then secondly, of course, the tariff situation, they're trying, you know, that's another thing. And, you know, China, apparently it's the sales have dropped off, and, you know, so, and then they recently let go 3,900 people, you know, but again, that's what happens in the car industry. Okay. But you shouldn't make a bet on going electric because it's a fad. You know, if you're going to make a bet on something, bet what Toyota is doing, which is hydrogen.
Yeah, I mean, in the spirit of Le Mans and innovation being a lot of what that race is, the hydrogen stuff, I think, is the coolest thing since Audi and Audi went diesel.
We went in 2016, and we actually saw the hydrogen car run.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just saying, it did, I think, one or two laps.
Yeah,
but that was the birth of it.
Right. Now they're, I'm someone that's kind of like in on this hydrogen stuff. Like I really want to see it succeed.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's cool.
I'm obviously well aware of, you know, the con of doing hydrogen, which is if you puncture the fuel cell, it is a big fiery mess. Like I'm totally aware of
it's an atomic bomb.
Yeah, it's not a good sight. However, combustion engines, as they are already a lot of tiny explosions within an engine, and if you puncture that thing and the fuel goes everywhere, you can have a fiery mess as well. So however they are able to work in the safety around running a hydrogen powered car, I think once they do that, it'll be pretty easy to go from there. And I also I saw one article of a hydrogen-powered car that I don't know if it's on the market for sale or anything like that, or if this was just a design that someone came up with. But they had the fuel cells that were replaceable. Or I'm sorry, interchangeable, pretty much. So when you ran out of hydrogen, you would go around the back of the car. I know, and again, it's definitely more of just a proof concept at this point, but you would basically go around to the back of the car and then twist the handle, and there were four tanks in the back. You twist the handle of one, pull it out. It was like pulling out a propane tank, right? Stand it up, grab that's the old one, and then you go grab the new one, put that in, and you're good to go. I was like, that's a very quick, easy way to refuel the car. If that kind of system were to be used. Obviously, you know, having the fuel cell at the rear of the car and being exposed to any rear damage, you know, that's, again, how do you keep it safe? But it was a cool design, nevertheless, and it didn't take, you know, more than 2 minutes or a minute to change out and refuel the thing and go.
Yeah.
So. But I find this hydrogen stuff interesting. I do think it's, I know the old LMP ones, where, you know, Audi, Porsche, and Toyota were going at it with the crazy, amount of battery usage per lap that they could use. That was definitely impressive, don't get me wrong. And when we saw those cars, they were literal spaceships going around. But I mean, I think innovation wise, I think Audi's diesel approach was very cool for what that whole program was.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And then the only other thing that came out of this, from what I got from reading some stuff, is that Penske built stuff in to protect themselves into the contract. The penalty to cancel both programs simultaneously would have cost Porter the price of whatever they were paying Penske to run for two seasons.
Nice.
So good for them, but bad for Porsche. Anyway, I don't understand it, but yeah. Anyway, we'll move on.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't impact IMSA, but does, as you said, Christian, it really does throw a wrench into Le Mans next season.
Yeah. The one thing I did kind of think about as well with this is the one positive way to look at it outside of just losing Le Mans, which I think is very hard to overcome. There is a good argument that you could say IMSA is the more professional series to be in and higher level series to be in.
Now there are some things, and I will say this, Ben Keating aptly points out he is not a fan of some of the in-race in-race rules that IMSA runs by, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like it. So that's fine. That's his choice. I mean, he does run in certain races. He just finds it to be some of the time he just finds that you get shuffled to the back, you know, and certain things. And I in some ways he's right. I'm not a fan of some of their yellow flag things and such, but that's his choice. He's bringing the check to run the teams. So he has a right to say that. But I will say this, Christian, I think bang for the buck, you're better off in IMSA.
Yeah.
So given how the last couple of years have gone in terms of it being a Ferrari fest, yes.
Well, I mean, not only that, but like you in GTP, you can run all pro lineups.
Yeah.
Which, yes, you could do that in hypercar, but if you want to show up as a one car team, you can do that. It's not gonna hurt your pocketbook.
No, and you can show up. You can show up and just run the Michelin Endurance Series too, like Lamborghini's doing.
Yep, you can do that. But then the other thing is, again, the only one of the only pro GT3 series is in IMSA.
Yep.
Worldwide, yep. Like that. That's.
Yeah, that's an all-pro group, yeah. And the racing in there is pretty damn good. And I will say this, and in some aspects, sometimes the GTM cars outperform the GT Pro cars. So,
well, when you get past the stage of the race where the AM drivers are done, it becomes an entire pro race.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
Again, to be fair, like does that happen in WEC? Of course. However, with the way the rules are laid out, and you know, this is the difference that Keating talks about, because you can get yourself back into the race, you basically nix the your weak AM driver at that point, and you get a true pro GT3 race. So when you have stuff like that, like it makes it exciting. So, all right. Well,
I think that covered everything.
Yeah, just about. The only other note that I have is Ganassi is expanding their Indy NXT program from two to four cars.
And I think Yuko's went up one car maybe to three.
Yeah. There's the field's supposed to get bigger.
Yeah.
So, which is cool. So.
So good for that series making a comeback. Still want to see them running at Indy, but that's Roger's got his feeling on that. So, anyways,
yeah, I think there's a lot of people.
Oh, and the other thing, just this weekend, from a TV standpoint, we have, like Tristan noted, we have Petit Le Mans on Saturday, and then we have the Bathurst 1000.
Yes.
So if you want to extend it for 24 hours. Wait for Petit Le Mans to finish and flip over to Bathurst 1000.
Yep. And then
so,
if you don't want any sleep the night before Petit, you can stay up and watch the first race of Super Formula this weekend, and they're at
Fuji. And then second race is sometime during this Bathurst 1000.
Yes. Yep. But they're at Fuji.
Good stuff. Good stuff there.
So
it's a fun series to watch. Yeah.
I think there was.
All right.
Well, yeah, and then NASCAR is at Vegas.
Vegas.
And
that's it.
There's another NLS race this weekend at the Nordschleife. And if you want to watch.
Is Brian Sermon running?
Maybe.
I don't think he is.
Let me rephrase that. He can, because he's off
right
this weekend. But I don't know.
But there hasn't been a.
I don't think he's.
I didn't see any build up for it.
Yeah, I don't think anything is going into it. There's also a GT World Challenge Europe round in Barcelona, as well. If you wanted to watch that.
So a lot going on.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff this weekend.
Uh-huh.
All right.
And on that note,
good night.
Thank you guys for listening to the Redness Podcast, hosted by Christian Abbott, Sean Abbott, and Nathan Lavin. It's produced by Christian Abbott, and music is by Alex Wart and Harrison Tate.